Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to talk to Sharon, who I've known for, I'm tempted to say, over 25 years. In fact, just before we started recording, we were talking about some very old stories from the 90s where I was a bit of a brat and, you know, she called me out for it. So without further ado, let's get started. And Sharon, if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Hi, Agnan. Thank you for having me over. So a bit about me. I education wise, I completed my BCom in 2004, and in 2014, greatly inspired, I traveled to Sydney. I completed my double masters. I did one in counseling and another in social work, and I have my social work and counseling experience in Sydney. So about 6 years of that in Sydney, where you know, I've worked with perpetrators of domestic violence, including survivors of domestic violence, also people having mental health conditions, you know, even including dealing with day-to-day, you know, life stresses, dealing with anxiety, depression, all of those. So yeah, that's a bit about my qualifications and work experience. Because of COVID, as COVID has, you know, changed the balance of everybody's lives, so it has it for me, where it inspired me to come back to family, living in India, in Bangalore. So been here with them and have had my private practice going on the side. So I do have clients, I could say humbly, from across the globe. And yeah, helping people has always been a passion of mine. And that's what inspired me to study or gain the degrees that I have. So that's me in short.
Thank you, Sharon. So, you know, I think you mentioned a few things here. So you said we're coming out of probably, you know, we're probably coming out of it's a generational pandemic, right? I think most people alive today have not seen or even heard of something like what we are going through at the moment. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of articles and books and things like that. But I think the other thing that's going to be very important coming out of this is mental health, Sharon. Mm-hmm. So why is mental health important, and what's your perspective on that?
I think the biggest blessing through this pandemic has been the focus on mental health as such, because we've been so used to like shoving our emotions down, pushing them down, and just carrying on, soldiering on with our everyday lives, right? So psychotherapy or therapy has played such an important role, at least in the last 18 months, that people are like sitting up and saying, hey, stop, my mental health is, you know, affected. I need to take time out from work or from whatever I'm doing and gather myself and come back and be able to give 100%, which was not the case, you know, 18 months ago or even 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So mental health, I would say, is a state of psychological and emotional well-being. And like, let's say, you know, when we're born, we're like, some of us have been happy babies, some of us have been, you know, quiet babies. Mental health, as I would say, like you use the word generational, right at the start when you explained about COVID, I think mental health is similar to that. It's a generational thing. Mothers, you know, expectant mothers, they place focus on the mother's well-being, or like, you know, eat properly or listen to happy songs or be happy constantly because the child will be happy. Why is that importance placed on the mother-child connection then? Because mental health is that impactful. Like, for example, if an expectant mother is scared or under the influence of alcohol or drugs or is in a traumatic environment, that affects the child, and the child can possibly have mental health conditions. Now, mental health conditions is different to mental health. Like, as I said, mental health is your psychological and your emotional and your social well-being, right? Mental health conditions are conditions that you've been diagnosed with, like for example, general anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, or depression, or bipolar, or schizophrenia. These are lifelong conditions. You cannot be healed from these conditions, but you will have medications to be able to cope or manage with these conditions. It's like, you know, having polio when you're a child. It remains with you for the rest of your life, right? That's how mental health is, like mental health conditions impact the mental health of a person. So it's as simple, I would say, taking care of your mental health should be similar to how you take care of your physical health. Now, during the lockdown, there has been a lot of rage about being fit, doing home exercises if you can't have access to the gym.
Yeah.
So again, it was putting more attention or focus onto your physical well-being. Nobody was speaking about an emotional well-being, right? So if you are affected physically, like you have a cut or you have fallen down the stairs and twisted your ankle, you would run to the doctor. You would get that out checked. But if you are feeling overwhelmed or anxious, or if you're getting angry often, you tend to put it aside saying, oh, I'll deal with it later. No, but that's your mental health. It needs to be dealt with in the here and now. And I guess this is what we're waking up to, that we can't put it off anymore. We have to address it now. And I mean, I'm surprised with how mental health has gained awareness in India because of it.
Thank you, Sharon. I think this is very eye-opening for me, but you've brought up a very good point, is that it used to be a taboo, right? At least, you know, let's say that I've known you from the mid-90s. Your brother and I have been very good friends for a few decades now. But I think the way things have evolved is it used to be considered a taboo, at least in certain cultures. I would think a lot of Eastern cultures, it's considered a taboo where people don't talk about it. But today, it seems like it's evolved. I think speaking about mental health and even getting help is more evolved, and people think that it's becoming more and more okay to get help. Just like I think you gave a brilliant analogy here, is like if you feel like you're not well from a physical standpoint, you go and get help. It's the same thing with mental health as well. So can you maybe talk about that evolution and, you know, what has caused it, or any thoughts on that evolution of the perception of mental health, Sharon?
That's a good question. I'm glad I got that opportunity to go to Australia and study, because it kind of opened my mind up to how people react to mental health, what is their approach to mental health as such. Like, I have been with the ideology, like for example, Australia, and the mental health awareness is so far in the future. Like India, for example, I would say even South Asian countries, they're probably 10 steps back, because, you know, again, the stigma attached to it. So if I can give you an example, the first time I sought out therapy was because my brother was going for one. And I was asked to tag along. So I said, I have nothing else to do, so let me go. And this was my first time sitting in that space with another person. And I was supposed to be vulnerable. I was supposed to open up and talk about things that were bothering me. But I'm grateful that I had such a bad experience with that lady, because it kind of, again, added to my journey of becoming a therapist in the here and now. So what she did was, she actually did not listen to me, did not make me feel validated, did not make me feel safe. Actually felt like I had fingers pointing at me, right? And I was like, okay, probably this is not my cup of tea. So when I came out of and I had that session probably in 2010. Yeah. It was in 2010, and I swore off therapy. But 4 years later, I was going to study to be a counselor. So that's that part of the life journey. But I guess when you have a bad experience with a therapist, those few people who are open to the idea of therapy do not encounter with the right therapist, then they might swear off therapy. So there are so many things other than the stigma attached. Like, for example, I think with South Asian countries, as I mentioned before, the stigma is predominantly shame, that I need to go and ask somebody else for help. Therapy is seen as you need help, so you need to come into therapy. But that's the grandest and the greatest misconception there ever was or is. Therapy is a safe space. It's meant to create a safe space for you where you can be vulnerable and you can explore yourself without any fear of judgment or any biases. That's what therapy or a therapeutic setting is meant to be. And you need to access or gain access to therapist or psychotherapist who have been certified or licensed by able bodies. Like, for example, in Australia, you have membership bodies, or could be in the US, could be in the Canada, could be in Canada, where you have to be part of a licensed body or membership organization to be able to practice as a therapist. We don't have that in India. So we can have many people who have done probably a 2-week course to a 6-month course would complete that and say, okay, I'm a psychotherapist. Or who could complete a 2-year course have not had experience. Like in my degree, they ensured that we have to complete 1,000 hours of face-to-face therapy, providing face-to-face therapy, 4,000 hours, have a supervisor to account for those 1,000 hours, and only then you would get your certification, which is not the case in India. So again, accessing the right therapist is also attached to the stigma of, if I've had a bad experience, I'm not going to go and try that again. Why would I give it a shot again, right? I would say pre-COVID times, there was a clear classification of the first world countries and the developing countries. First world countries like US, Canada, Australia, where it was about, okay, government is giving you benefits, you know, so hence access mental health facilities. If you are unable to pull down a job, then, you know, we will give you an allowance, but get help. So because there was the backing of the government abroad, people were more open to that. In countries like India, it's more of the dog eat dog world, right? It's a rat race. So we need to keep, like, okay, push everything aside. I need to be able to put food on the table, put a roof over my head, clothing on our backs, and I'm not going to worry about what's going on internally for me. And that's also the culture of the corporate. Like, you need to work XYZ hours in order to get the pay that you get. So yeah. I guess that was the pre-COVID times. And I think post-COVID, like pre-COVID, at least in India, you had celebrities who started speaking about mental health, like Manisha Koirala during her marriage divorce and then cancer, yeah. Shah Rukh Khan during his shoulder surgery, to most recently Deepika Padukone came out and said, mental health, I am suffering from depression. And while the immediate stigma was, how can she come out and say things like that, to, oh my God, okay, like the youngsters especially were, wait, she's speaking about something that's valid, that I'm going through, that I can empathize with her, I can actually see the truth in what she's speaking, to Anushka Sharma coming out and saying, I have mental health, and most recently Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. You know, it was there, out there for the whole world to see. So we have celebrities who are using their platforms in the right way to promote mental health, to say that please take care of your mental health, because I have gone through something and I can speak from experience that therapy helps. Like, even my brother has spoken about the importance of mental health.
I watched his videos.
Yeah. So it's about, if you are a celebrity, what are you using your platform for, right? So if you are a person, what are you using your voice for? Each one of us have a voice. Each one of us have our truth to be spoken. Like, you've created this platform to, you know, share with the masses about the importance of different professions or different under different topics, right? And build the knowledge on that. So similarly, people have their own truths, like, okay, I am suffering from anxiety, or I get angry often and I don't know how to control it. All right, there's no shame in that. I need, instead of speaking to friends who would be biased, I need to seek out people who are unbiased, or who would look at me without any judgment. That would be including family members. Family members, automatically, I think, biases, judgments come in. So therapy would create that space where there's safety, where there's room to open up and explore yourself a little more about what your thoughts are, what your fears are, and get a fresh perspective or a new perspective. So yeah, and it's evolving, and I love that it's continuing to grow, you know. And I hope that we get to a point where we can talk about mental health as though we talk about the weather.
Sharon, I think this is such a brilliant answer. I'm just going to have to watch this, just this one answer that you gave multiple times, because it's packed with so much information. You know, you touched upon how, you know, governments can bring about change, right? How companies, if they, you know, if they start to get more aware, they can bring about this change. They can, so they may not be, they may not be able to bring about the change by themselves, but they can be a big factor in bringing about this change. And also, I think how celebrities can use their platform to bring about this change, because it's something that's needed. And the other thing that you said that I'm inferring from here is, it's becoming normalized, and I think all of us should play a part in normalizing getting help, right?
Yes.
I think it's just brilliant you say that. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit, Sharon, because I think you said that, you know, I'm going to go back to an earlier point that you made, is that you said, okay, mental health is like bodily health. Right. So, and I could become stronger by, let's say, running or going to the gym or doing something that builds bodily strength. And I think of resilience as, you know, exercise for the mind or mental health, something like that. Right. That's the analogy that I have. So can you talk a little bit about resilience and your opinion on it? And how could I, you know, just this random person somewhere who's watching this, or me myself, right? How could I build resilience?
Think of a child, right? Mm-hmm. Think of a baby who then becomes a toddler and is learning to walk. So is crawling, gets up, tries to find their balance, falls. What happens next? Do they give up? Does the baby give up wanting to walk? No, it keeps at it. Resilience is holding yourself together, pulling yourself together, and pulling through a difficult moment. Like, you know, it could be like for adults, it could be trauma, it could be loss of job, loss of loved one, loss of a pet. It could be for sports people, it could be an injury. Resilience is pulling through that, keeping at, you know, working through recovery, your physical well-being, but also emotionally, what are you feeling? Sitting in that space, like I would say, in order to recognize and build on resilience, you need to factor in five things. One is your emotional intelligence. Name what you're feeling. Why are you feeling? Ask yourself that question. Why are you feeling this? What has led you to feel this way? What can you do about it? So building on your emotional intelligence. And your emotional intelligence is like, it's like an amoeba. It keeps multiplying and growing based on the situation. Like, you won't get one particular situation in life. You get different circumstances and you evolve. We are constantly evolving, right? So resilience, or your emotional intelligence like that, for example, keeps evolving. So be curious about your emotional intelligence and build on it. Second is energy. very important. Where do you invest your energy? It's like investing money. You're very careful about where you invest your money, right? You would want to have higher returns. If you're investing it for a certain period of time, you want to multiply it. Like if it's not twice, three times or four times, right? Like that, where are you investing your energy? Try to find a balance, right? Try to find a balance. Try to create like a routine. Starting with the basics, rest. Why is sleep so important and not given enough attention to? Right? People, like youngsters would say, oh, I slept only for an hour. And at 30 years old, you're like, you slept for an hour? I could not function, right?
Yeah.
So sleep is very important. Why? Because it's not only for your mental health, but it's for your physical health, your brain, your body, every organ is resetting itself, and it needs at least a minimum of 7.5 to 8 hours to do that. 6 would get you like on a half tank of fuel from here to another 100 kilometers. It's like that. So you need rest. Nutrition, very important. Junk diet would only suffice you to a certain extent. Include healthy diet. Like, what would that look like? Your healthy diet might be different to mine. And that's okay. There's not like, you know, you can't point fingers and say, gee, why are you doing this? No. Each one of us are unique. So our way of functioning is also unique. So it's rest, your diet, and also your work-life balance. You can't be invested fully at work. What about your personal life? If you're single, okay, find time to, go out with friends or spend time catching up, making those connections, because we are all human beings, are relational beings. We are not meant to be alone. We thrive in the company of others. We cannot thrive by ourselves. So that's another part of resilience. Third is prioritize. Prioritize your time, prioritize who you want to keep in your life. So going back to the basics, ask yourself recognize your values and your strengths. And once you recognize your values and strengths, allocate time and energy for that and those who help build in that process. So if your values are X, Y, Z and your strengths are A, B, C, find people with similar values and strengths who would be able to pick you up if you falter or fall, or help lift you up if you want to climb up the ladder, right? So prioritize people and prioritize yourself in that process of resilience. Relationships. Somebody very wise once told me that entertain those who honor you. And those who do not honor you, don't entertain them in your thoughts. Because you're investing time, energy, and effort into that or into those who don't value you. So come back to relationships of who values you, who honors you, spend time with them, keep them. If, and I tell my clients this, placing boundaries is better. Be to family members, to loved ones, and that's okay. Because your family or loved ones' mental health is not your responsibility. Your responsibility is your own mental health, right? So in relationships, placing boundaries is helpful, is very important, but mostly have people who build you up. Again, going back to prioritize and relationships, they kind of enmesh together. And last but not the least, perspective. We all have our own perspective. We become tunnel vision, like the horses in a race, right? And every problem has a different solution. If I present you with a problem, you might have a solution which could be different to mine or even similar. And if we ask another person, they might have their own way of solving that problem. But not to say that one person's problem-solving skills is better than the other person's. No, we all have our different ways of processing things, different approaches into a situation, and different ways of problem-solving, and that's okay. But with perspective, you have to remember that it's not my way or the highway. And that's very crucial if you take all the other 4 points, like we've spoken about emotional intelligence, we've spoken about energy, we've spoken about prioritizing and relationships. If your perspective in this is a healthy one, then they're all going to flourish. If it's unhealthy, then it's not going to flourish. It's not going to get better. You can't blame yourself then or another person for that relationship or for that thing. Like, it could be work also for not working out, right? So you need to, when it comes to resilience, we have to be aware that when we have these 5 points, emotional intelligence, energy, prioritizing, relationships and perspective, when you club all of these together, it becomes a fist. And with a fist is what resilience stands for. We can fight together, we can move forward, we can become better versions of ourselves. It's like going back to that example of a child, a baby and a toddler. If they gave up, if a child gives up, if a baby gives up walking, saying that I've fallen 1,000 times, I'm not going to get back up. They have loved ones around. The child has, or the baby has loved ones around it saying that, oh, you can do it. Come on, you can do it. You need your own cheering squad. But before you have a cheering squad, you need to become your own cheerleader. And therapy helps you in that. It helps you create, like gain new, not create, gain new perspective. See from another point of view. It's perspective is like lenses, right? We can wear one, like your glasses, right? This is a nice frame, but hey, hang on. I need to get my vision tested because I'm probably getting a headache. So we get glasses that suit us better so we can see better. That's what therapy does. It helps you in your journey of resilience. And each one of us are an expert of our own lives. We know how to be resilient. But when we start to become vulnerable, we doubt our strengths, we doubt our values, we doubt us. Like, can we do this? But look back, you've survived so much. You're standing in the here and now. So yes, you are resilient. So recognizing resilience is also a big thing.
Amazing. I think it looks like I have two answers that I have to go back and listen to multiple times. But I think what is very beautiful with this answer that you've given, Shannon, is that it almost gives me a framework to kind of help me with my mental health journey. I'm actually going to write down these points and maybe stick it around in one of the walls that I have around me. So it's just beautiful that you said this. So the other question I have, Shannon, is all of us either are the person or we know someone who needs help in the space, right? Who either needs therapy or maybe something even more advanced, but we either know someone or we are the person, right? That's there. So what would your advice be on how does one handle this? So how do I handle the situation? Like, if I need help, then what do I do? Or if I know a loved one who needs help, then how do I go about handling that, Shannon?
Let's start with ourselves, right? I tell my clients, self-talk is very important. You need, self-talk is how you talk to yourself, very simply put. So you need to talk to yourself the way you would talk to your best friend, the way you would talk to somebody you love. Like, probably, let's take your pet or your child. How would you talk to them? You would talk to them gently. You would talk to them with kindness. You would talk to them with love, right? Similarly, if we recognize how we're talking to ourselves, we'd be like, oh my God, I'm just being very brutal with me. Recognizing is first step. What do we do after? Okay, asking yourself that question, what is it that you want? How can I be of help? So let's start with our own selves. What's going on for you? How can I help? Because each one of us have a child within us that has not been fulfilled in their years of growing up. Yeah. Like, I can speak for myself. Like, I felt or there's a child in me that needs, how do I put this, needs extra encouragement, right? Because I grew up having low self-confidence and low self-esteem because I was bullied growing up. And in order to overcome that, I have to be kinder and gentler on myself, saying that, hey, it's okay. You're feeling overwhelmed, just sit it out. You know, you don't have to do this. Address this in probably 1 hour's time. Take this time out. Giving yourself permission to step back and say, you're okay, you're fine. What do you need? Do you want to have a sip of water? Do you want to rest? Do you want to relax? Do you want to go out for a walk? Which is healthy, which is another something that I thought we could address at the end. It's a mindfulness activity. Stepping out into nature and looking around us. Because we're so caught up either with the laptop or with our phone. There's so much of screen interaction between us and the phone or technology, gadgets, right?
That's me.
Yeah, I can see there's so many gadgets around me.
Yeah.
No, but taking the time out to step out. Like, I know that you go on drives. You like to be in nature. Like, it's a sort of reconnecting yourself. And how do you feel after reconnecting with nature? Or how do you feel after you step out of something stressful? You find that your anxiety levels, which were really high, have simmered down at least a little, if not a lot.
Yeah.
Right. That's something that you can ask yourself again, going back to if you feel you're struggling, what's happening for you? Why you're feeling overwhelmed? Okay. If you can't answer that why, that's all right. What do you need? That's the most important question. What do you need? You could need that. I want to get away from here. Okay. Where would you like to go? Remember the 4 W's and 1 H question: the what, when, where, how, why, and how. Asking yourself those questions actually help. If it is somebody else, asking questions which are not sympathetic, or not being sympathetic, that would, I think, sympathy is surface level. Empathy is more like, I get you. What is it that you want? How can I be of help? If it's somebody that you know for a while, then asking them that question of what can I do to help, or saying something on the lines of this must be really hard for you, or if I were in your shoes, I don't know what I would have done. Not problem solving, not offering solutions, but just sitting in that space with that person. I mean, that's what happens in therapy. A professional sits with you in that space, that icky space, and says, hey, don't worry, you're not alone. We'll do this together. It's not solving the problem. It might be walking, or running, or just staying in a storm. You need a companion. As I said, we're all relational people, right?
Yeah.
We're all relational beings. So we need somebody to journey with us in that space. And if you see somebody struggling, just sitting with them. Sometimes I've sat with a client in silence, and this was a 5-year-old child. I sat with that client for 45 minutes in silence. And at the end of the session, the child just came up, gave a hug, waved goodbye, and left. Instead of offering, just sit in that space. Just sit next to that person. If you feel like you don't know what to say, if you're scared that you might say the wrong thing or might not be the right thing, sit in that space. Saying a simple statement of, I'm here for you, that also helps. And not everybody is open. Not everybody is open to the idea of therapy, right? So we can't even force somebody to go to therapy. So how can you become a stopgap? You can try these techniques. And when they're ready, say, hey, I know somebody. I'm not sure if that person's the right person for you, but I think it would be a good connect to help with that particular problem you had a few days ago, weeks ago, months ago. So, yeah, that's my way of approaching it.
This is amazing, Sharon. I'm actually very glad I'm having this conversation. I was pretty sure, I think, you would give some fantastic advice, but you've just exceeded any expectation that I had set, which was already very high. So it's amazing. I mean, it's just gotten me thinking about so many things. But I have some other questions for you. Is so you mentioned that you had a career pivot, right? So you were, you were doing something and then you realized that, okay, here's my calling, and then you had a career pivot. But also, I somehow think that if society was more accepting to mental health and improving mental health as a career, you probably would have started that career from the get-go, right? Probably, yeah. We don't know,
yeah.
Right? But that may have been how it was. So assuming that there are people now who want to get into it could be anything in improving mental health as a career, right? What would your advice be as a professional to them, Sharon?
That's a good question. I've had so many pivots in career paths. When I wanted to start working, I remember telling this uncle that I wanted to be an air hostess. I think I was 15 when I said that. And he's like, are you mad? Like, you want to do a servant's job? And I'm like, what? Then that led me to having 10 years in the corporate world. But I never felt satisfied. But I remember having, you know, what you call that job satisfaction when I worked with... When I volunteered my time with NGOs, like old age homes and orphanages and places like that. And I was like, I want to help people. And you're right. If there was no stigma attached to mental health or helping people, then I would have probably approached this profession, this choice of mine years ago. I wouldn't have gotten to it when I did, but I'm here. You know, no matter which path I took, I'm here. For those who want to get into this field, look to get into a certification program like, universities and colleges. I went to an amazing college in Sydney, which helped me in this process. And they allow you to work with schools, hospitals, organizations, depending on what you want to specialize in. So I wanted to specialize in child and adolescent and trauma-informed care. So I got to work with schools, I got to work with colleges and another organization, where I was able to, you know, build on my skills. So look to study a certified course. It could be a one-year diploma, but make sure you get some hands-on experience in that, or probably a two-year course, like I did a two-year master's in social work and in counseling, and both had 1,000 and 1,500 hours that you needed to complete, which gives you real-life experience. And you are in a safe space with a supervisor, where if you feel stuck, then you're able to, you know, discuss that. And because we don't have, I'm not sure of how mental health degrees are in India. So far, I haven't heard amazing things. I've heard good things, but not amazing things. And my bar is pretty high when anybody who wants to join in the field. So if you're looking to study abroad, if you can afford to do that, then great. Or do certification. There are many online courses which allows you to also have this hands-on experience. Look to get certified. It's very, very important, because you're sitting in a sacred space. Somebody is trusting you completely to sit in that space with you and be vulnerable. And you need to treat that with integrity. You need to treat that with care. And you get to learn many things about how to sit in an awkward position with a client, how to draw boundaries with a client, how to maintain confidentiality. Like, for example, how to also, you know, conduct an ethical practice. Like, I'm very big on ethics. So, for example, you cannot sit in a room filled with other people and provide therapy for a client. That is unethical and it's a huge no-no, right? So studying a certified course will help you learn all of these aspects. There are great forms of therapy that you could specialize in, like EMDR, trauma-informed care, CBT, which is cognitive behavior therapy, there's person-centered, dance therapy, art therapy. There are many forms. Whatever works for you will work for your client. So pick on your strengths, identify what your strengths are, and then build on that.
Amazing. And thank you, Sharon. So in one of your answers, you said that we could do a quick mindfulness session. So would you be okay doing that?
Yeah, sure. There are a few mindfulness exercises that I can talk to you about, and we can practice one. Whenever you feel anxious, overwhelmed, or stressed up, or angry, you're starting to boil up, remember to breathe out, literally through your mouth. It's very important for you to do that because that's one way to let your body know that, hey, I need to take a step back because emotionally I'm getting wired. So your brain, which is, it's like this. So your prefrontal cortex is the front, the amygdala is at the back, and this is your spinal cord. So the prefrontal cortex is your logical brain. The amygdala is your emotional brain. And the spinal cord, which is attached to these two, is what sends signals to the entire body. So when you get overwhelmed, stressed, or anxious, this is on an overdrive. So what is supposed to be a two-way street between the logical brain and the emotional brain becomes a one-way street only coming from the emotional brain. The logical brain says, okay, bye, I'm done for business, pulls his shutter down and he says, I'm going home. He falls asleep. So when you breathe out and you stress that breath out, you're sending a message to the logical brain saying, hey, wake up. You need to become more active because the Mr. Amygdala is losing the plot. We need to bring them back into business, right?
So I actually have a lot of other questions for you because I think one thing that really interested me is your area of, you said when you were studying, when you were getting your degree, you kind of specialized in a certain number of topics. I have a lot of questions around that, but sure. I also want to respect your time. So I think we should probably do another video on that. But I think the final question I have for you is if people were to want to get in touch with you, how would that be?
You can get in touch with me via my website. That's sharonuthappa.com. There's also my Instagram handle, which is sharon.uthappa, or Facebook, the same, sharon.uthappa. So you can get in touch with me on any one of these three portals.
Okay, so I'm going to link all of them in the okay. video description, right? Yeah. So I hope anyone who has questions. So I've reached out to Sharon a few times and she's been very responsive. So anyone who has questions, please feel free to reach out. I think you probably have heard and now you know that she's amazing. So definitely reach out to her. But I just want to say, Sharon, thanks a lot. I think, I've done a few different conversations around technology, around business, and so many different things. But I think this really hit me at a different level. I think I have to just watch this video multiple times to just digest, because you've said so many things and they really strike a chord at very different levels, Sharon. So I, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say thank you because thank you for taking the time to actually speak to me. But I think the topic that you've spoken about is just amazing. I mean, I'm pretty convinced that I'm going to go and get therapy because I think there are certain things about me that that I need to probably I don't know, I think a therapist can solve it. I don't know what the solution is called, but I'm sure meeting a therapist can help me maybe be a better human being, if not anything else. So I just want to just say thanks a lot, Sharon. I mean, this has been it's been amazing. So thank you for your time, and you know, for those
thank
watching,
you for thank having you. Me
thank you, Sharon.